Parshas Vayera. There is a famous pasuk in Parshas Vayera in Perek Yudchet, pasuk Yudzayin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to overturn Sodom, and before he does so, he says, "Hamachaste ani me Avraham." Should I conceal this from Avraham? Should I keep this a secret from him? Asher ani yoseh, that which I am planning to do. In the end, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, I won't conceal it from him. As we know, he did tell him. Why? Ki yadati, because I know, l'man ashe yitzaver es bono v'es beis ayacharov, because I know that he is going to instruct his children and all his household, v'shomru derech Hashem, in order to safeguard the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lastly, stoka u'mishpot. So it seems to be, as it were, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had some sort of sophic. Should I tell Avraham? Should I not tell Avraham? That's what it sounds like. Hamachaste is a question with a he at the beginning. Hamachaste, should I conceal it? And in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu resolves the sophic and he says, no, I will tell him. Why? Because he's going to instruct his children and his household to be Shema the Derech of Hashem. Very unclear from the pasuk what exactly was the question in the first place, and if for some reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu had cause to conceal it for Avraham, so why did he say, no, I will tell him after all because of his children, etc., etc.? Why is one dependent on the other? There's many mahalchim, we've discussed this in previous years, but I saw this week an interesting and very important approach from the Dubna Magid. Interestingly, it does not come with the Moshel. Normally the Dubna Magid is based on the Moshel, but this does not, in his Sefer Oyel Yaakov. And he asks over there another very fascinating question, which I've never seen anybody ask. A very simple question, and that is, why do we not find anywhere that Avraham Avinu was busy, until it was too late, giving Musa to the Anshei Sodom? After HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally tells him what's going to happen, so he davens for them, 50 tzaddikim, 40, 30, he's overly concerned with them. But what about when it was not yet too late? Why didn't he approach them and give them Musa if he was so concerned and he considered it his business, as clearly he did by virtue of the fact that he davens for them? So why at the time did he not give them Musa and try and be machzer them b'tshuva? And Ad Kedei Kach, the Dubna Magid says, and perhaps if he didn't, he is in some part liable for their Aveira. We find this many times in Chazal, that if you could give Musa, and you didn't bother, then you're considered to be part and parcel of that Aveira. We discussed this in the past. There's a lot of criticism in Chazal for Noach. Noach didn't rebuke his Doir. And he's considered in part responsible for that. That's why there's a pasuk in the Navi that calls the Mabul Mei Noach. Noach's water. Why is it Noach's water? It's their water. No, because he is in part responsible. Had he only been machzir them b'tshuva, then they wouldn't have committed the Averas that brought about the Mabul in the first place. So too, why do we not find, this is the question of the Dubna Magid, why do we not find anywhere in Chazal any mention of the fact that Avraham Avinu went out to give them rebuke, to give them Musa, in order to bring them back? So he says the following, and this will answer now both questions. Number one, what was the whole discussion? Should he tell Avraham? What was the answer? Secondly, why did he not rebuke Sodom? So he says as follows. The Gemara says, and you have to listen very carefully to the words to appreciate the beauty of his pshat. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos the following words. Just as there is a mitzvah al odom, there is a mitzvah incumbent on a person, loimar dovor hanishma, to say something that will be listened to, kach, so too, there's also a mitzvah not to say that which will not be listened to. That's what the Gemara says. A fascinating comparison. Just like there's a mitzvah to say that which will be listened to, equally there's a mitzvah not to say what will not be listened to. By the way, just as an aside, I once read a fascinating story, one of the Vizhnitsa Rebbes. The story was told that there was a Vizhnitsa Chosid, very wealthy individual, a landlord, And he had in one of his houses an almana, a widow, who was renting one of his several apartments, and she couldn't pay the rent. And he was threatening to evict her. And friends of hers appealed to him and said, listen, you're a very wealthy individual. You can manage without a month's rent here and there. She's an Ishan Almona, never, why don't you have compassion? Let her stay there. No. He was determined, if she doesn't pay the rent by the deadline, I'm throwing her out. She said, check this then, she's going to be on the street on her own, she has nobody to fend for, no husband. He was unmoved. So they went to the Rebbe. They went to the Rebbe and they said, listen, maybe the Rebbe can try and convince him in some way to have a bit of rachmanas. He's a big oisha, he doesn't need a few thousand shekel here and there, or dollars, or whatever the currency was. Maybe you can convince him and persuade him to have compassion on this Almon. So the Rebbe said, leave it to me. All of a sudden, this big Oshir one day receives a knock on his door, and to his pleasant surprise, he opens the door, and who does he see? The Rebbe. Completely non-announced visit. The Rebbe's just turned up at his front door. He couldn't believe his luck. He tries to sort everything out, brings the Rebbe in. He has no idea why the Rebbe's there. The Rebbe comes in, sits down. The host, this wealthy landlord, sits down with him, and he's waiting to hear instruction or request or something. Why is the Rebbe here? And the Rebbe sits there in absolute silence. A minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. He doesn't know which way to look or to turn. It's very uncomfortable. Why is the Rebbe here? What does he want? What if he does want something, why is he not saying anything? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, quarter, half an hour, he sits there in absolute stone silence. And the landlord doesn't know which way to turn or to look at it. And eventually the Rebbe gets up. Shker, thank you very much for having me. Can't hold back, he's a Rebbe. Why did you come? He didn't say anything. He said, I came to Mekayim HaMitzvah. Which mitzvah? The Rebbe said, because the Gemara says, just as there's a mitzvah to say something that will be listened to, there's equally a mitzvah not to say that which will not be listened to. I was Mekayim that second mitzvah now. And he understood exactly what was meant, and he allowed the almona to stay in the apartment. I'll call upon him to open. So the Gemara says as follows: just as there's a mitzvah to say that which will be listened to, there's equally a mitzvah not to say that which will not be listened to. And the Gemara says in conclusion, Shenemar. The Gemara backs this up with a pasuk. Now, what does the pasuk say? It's a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk says, Al toichach leitz. Don't give rebuke to a mocker. Pen yisno'ek, or he'll just hate you, and he'll throw back leitz tonus in your direction. You won't listen to a word. And how does the pasuk carry on? Hoichach lechochem. But you should give toichacha to a wise person. Now, if the Gemara is trying to prove that you shouldn't give Musa, you shouldn't say something which is not going to be listened to. So what is the purpose? What is the point of this whole drasha? Don't give Musa to a leitz. Now, if you want to demonstrate that, which pasuk do you bring? Very reasonably, Al Teichach Leitz. That's very reasonable. But why must you quote the conclusion of the pasuk which says, give Musa to a chacham? That's not the point that we're trying to demonstrate. What point are we trying to demonstrate? Not what you should do. What you shouldn't do, don't give Musa to the late. So what should the Gemara have said? How do I know you shouldn't give Musa to the late? It's not going to be listened to. The Pasuk says, Al Teicha for late. Full stop, period. Why does the Gemara continue with the Pasuk? And besides, asks the Dubna Magid, what's this big mitzvah? It's a big mitzvah not to give Musa to a late. So it's such a big mitzvah. Why is it so important? So Dubna Magid answers everything in one line. And he says, the two are dependent on each other. Meaning, if you go to a late, what's a late? A mocker, scoffer, and you give him Musa, what will he do? He'll just throw it back in your face and you'll become the laughing stock of town. Now imagine you want to go to the Chacham now and you want to give him Musa. It's too late. Why is it too late? Because you've already become the laughing stock of town. Oh, it's him again. Oh, I've heard about you. You're the person everybody's laughing about. Why is everybody laughing at you? only because you gave Musa in the first place to a late who was never going to listen to in the first place. So the Dubna Magid says this is what the Gemara means. It's a mitzvah to give Musa to people who will listen. And it's also a mitzvah not to give Musa to those who won't listen to you. Do you know why? It's not two separate mitzvahs. It's dependent on each other. Because if you give Musa to those who won't listen, then ultimately you will not be able to give Musa to those who will. Because it'll be too late. You've already become the derision and the laughing stock of town. And that's why the Gemara quotes the entire pasuk. Al toichach leitz. Don't rebuke the mocker. And how does the pasuk continue? But do give Musa to the chacham. Why are we talking about that? That wasn't the point of the Gemara. The point of the Gemara was who you shouldn't give Musa to. Says the Dubna Magid, no. Do you know why I don't want you to give Musa to the late? I couldn't care less about the late. He won't listen, don't bother. No, because that will impinge on all of your efforts to give Musa to where it might well have been listened to, and now it won't. Why? You'll go to the Chacham. You want to give him Musa, and the Chacham will turn around, and he'll be made pon of. He'll turn around the chutz. You would never have done such a thing, but he knows you're the laughing, so you're the guy who goes around giving musa to everybody. That says the Dubna Magid, phenomenal pshat in the Gemara. That's why it's such a big mitzvah. Why is it such a big mitzvah not to give musa to the lates? Because that will jeopardize all your possibility of giving musa to people who otherwise would have listened. Says the Dubna Magid in conclusion, that's what it means over here as well. Avraham Avinu didn't give Musa to Bnei Sadaim. We asked why not. Do you know why he didn't give Musa to Bnei Sadaim? He knew they wouldn't listen. They were ashamed. Right, so they won't listen. Says Avraham Avinu, but that will have terrible consequences. Because then when I come to my own children and my own Bnei Bayis, and I want to rebuke them and bring them back to Berach Hashem, it will be too late. Oh, it's Dad again. He's on his ranting and raving mission, like he did with Sadaim. So therefore, says the Dubna Magid, if you want to know why he didn't rebuke Sadaim, it's because he knew they wouldn't listen, and that will affect his own children. Says the Dubna Magid, that's now pshat in the pasuk. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Hamachasa ani me'avrom. Should I conceal this from Avram? Why should you conceal it? The answer is, maybe I shouldn't tell him about it, because he's in part responsible. He didn't rebuke Anshei Sadaim. He bears achrayis. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? No. Ki yadati v'aynau l'man asher yitzave ezbonov u'bnei veisei acharov. It's only because he wanted to instruct his children and his household to be shame of the Derech Hashem, that's why he didn't rebuke Sadaim. It's not because he couldn't be bothered. He was being Makayim, the big mitzvah of not saying that which won't be listened to. Why not? Because if you do, then what will happen? You'll go to the people who will listen to you, and they won't listen either. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, initially Kaviyochel had a topic. Maybe I shouldn't tell Avram about this, because he really bears blame. Why didn't he rebuke Sadaim? The answer is, I know why he didn't rebuke Sadaim. Because he has his children and his family and his Bnei Bayis to be concerned about as well. And if he'd rebuke Sadaim, and they wouldn't listen, and they would mock him, then his own family wouldn't take him seriously either. And that was too precious for Avram too. The Mavatom, therefore he did correctly by not telling them about not giving them Musa, and that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu says, if that's the case, then I can tell Avram about Sadaim. A phenomenal pshat of the Dubna Magid. I want to share with you also a different piece. Beautiful yesod, a very important yesod, based on one word in our parasha in Perek Chof Aleph, Posuk Yud Dalet. Chof Aleph Yud Dalet. It says there, we know the story that Hagar is sent out of the house with her son Yishmael. She leaves the house, and it says in Posuk Yud Dalet, Vatelech Vatesach. Now we know what Vatelech means. Vatelech, she went. What's Vatesa? Strange looking word. So Vatesa, literally translated, is she got lost. got lost in the middle. Rashi says on that word Vatesa, Chazra Legilulei Beis Aviha. She went back to the Avodah Zarah of her forefathers. How does Rashi translate Vatesa? She got lost, she went back to Avodah Zarah. With the obvious question being, how did Rashi see that in the Pasuk? Maybe it means literally, Vatesa, she got lost. She didn't know whether to go right or left, forwards or backwards. Rashi says, no, she went back to Avodah Zarah. How do you know? Rashi always explains, Al Derech HaPshat. Where does the Pshat in the Pasuk indicate that she went back to Avodah Zarah? So I saw this week a phenomenal Pshat. I saw it in the name of Ramotcha Pogromansky. I saw this Ramotcha Gifter from Kells, quoted Ramotcha Pogromansky. Ramotcha Pogromansky, based on inquiries I did this week, initially came from Europe. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. Towards the end of his life, he died comparatively young, but he came to America and he was involved in the Tells Yeshiva. And Ramotcha Pogromansky, he said, as quoted by Ramotcha Gifter, the following pshat. Huge Yisrael. As a God-believing and God-fearing Jew, we believe that every stage of our lives and everything that happens to us is all directed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Gemara famously tells us, you don't even bang your finger on the table if that hasn't been preordained. There's no such thing as that was just by chance. Everything is orchestrated and run by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To the extent, therefore, and this is his big story, it says Ramotcha Pogromansky, a Jew is never lost. A Jew is never lost. What does it mean, lost? Lost means, I don't know where I am, I'm just walking around aimlessly with no purpose. That means you don't believe in Hashgacha Pratis. If you really believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing as I'm walking around aimlessly with no purpose. There must be a purpose. Could be you don't know what the purpose is. A Jew is never lost. A Jew is never lost. Avraham Avinu sent Hagar on her way. And it says, Vatelech, Vatesa, she lost. She got lost. What does that mean, she got lost? But she's a Talmud of Avraham Avinu. Is Rashi apparently no longer... She apparently went back to Avodah Zarah. She lost not just her geographical whereabouts, she lost her emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Because a Jew is never lost. Vatesa indicates now that that's the way she felt. Totally haphazard, walking around aimlessly without any destiny or purpose, just with no mission whatsoever. Vatesa, I'm lost. A God-fearing Jew is never lost. Is never lost. And if she's lost, that means she's no longer a God-fearing Jew and she's gone back to her Avodah Zarah. So much so. There's an incredible Medrash. The Medrash says on the Pasuk, what happens? We know the story. Her son is dying, Yishmael, dying of thirst, and all of a sudden, open miracle. There appears in front of their eyes, the Be'er. So it says she went to the Be'er and she filled her whole flask with water. You know what the Medrash says there? That shows us she doesn't have a Munah in Hashem. So he explains, if you've been a God-fearing Jew, you would have seen, wow, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu just did for me. He produced a phenomenal miracle. He needed water, here was water. Why are you filling your whole flask with water? As if to say, I better have some in reserve, just in case, what, next time HaKadosh Baruch Hu will abandon me? That clearly indicated she lacked emunah. Now listen to this amazing story. This was, as I mentioned, a vote in the name of Ramotcha Pogromansky. A Jew is never lost. There's a story with Ramotcha Pogromansky. Ramotcha Pogromansky, this is where I read the story. After the war, he made it his business, incredible efforts after the Holocaust, to find out if anywhere in Europe there might have been baby boys born during the war who never had a bris mila. They were on the run, they were in hiding, they didn't have any access to a moil, and they might have not had bris mila. Who's to say, maybe they just given up. So he made it his business to do inquiries, are there any boys, children out there who haven't had a bris mila? And he took with him Rav Isaac Osband. Rav Isaac Osband was the Rosh Hashiva eventually of Telz. he's no longer alive, but his son, Hirsch Talmud Chacham, is Rosh Yeshiva here of Sorotskin's Yeshiva. I'll call upon him often. So this Rav Motzer Pogromansky does inquiries, and he finds out that there's a baby boy in Kovna, in Lithuania, who was born during the war and didn't have a bris. Right, that's it. I'm going to make it my business to make sure he has a bris. So he asks Rav Isaac Ozban to accompany him, and of course a moil, and the three of them take a train, and they're on the way to Kovna. Why? In order to perform this bris for this uncircumcised baby boy. Now, as you'd expect, two Talmidei Chachamim of that stature, what do they do when they get on the train? Started talking and learning. What else should they do? And they got so involved in learning that, would you believe it, they missed their train stop. They missed the station. And all of a sudden they realize they're in the middle of nowhere. We've gone way past Kovna. Where are we? So Rav Isaac turns around to Rav Motzer and he says to him in Yiddish, we've got lost. We're lost. And Rav Motzer Pogromansky turns around to him and says, Ayid is kemol nisht fablonjet. Ayid is never lost. He says, what do you mean Ayid is never lost? And he says, I'll tell you. And he quoted this pasuk, Vateisa, Hogar was lost. And what does Rashi say? She went back to Avodah Zarah and explained, that's pshat in the pasuk. A Jew is never lost. So don't worry, we're not lost. So Isaac turned around to him and says, all right, it's a good pshat in the pasuk, it's a good drosha, but lemaisa, we're lost. That's what he said, lemaisa, we're lost. They get off the train, they're on the platform now trying to work out where, what, which way, and they realize they've got a bit of a wait now, they're going to have to take a train in the reverse direction, send them back to where they should have got off in the first place. And they're waiting around for Motcha and with Isaac Ozban, and all of a sudden they hear a shout. And somebody comes running up to them and says, Kveida Rabbonim! Kveida Rabbonim! So we're in a little town in the middle of nowhere, we just had a baby boy 8 days ago. Would you perhaps know maybe of a moil who could perform a bris? The Motzer turns around to Isaac, didn't I tell you? Ayid is never lost. Ayid is kemol nisht fablonjet. What does it mean, lost? Well, they ended up here by accident, by mistake. Apparently it wasn't an accident. He says, you want to know now why we missed our station? It was in order to perform the bris on this family that we never knew about. He says, I told you. It's not just a nice pshat in the pasuk. So you say it in Yiddishkeit. You know, the Gemara tells us, we learned this together in Mishnah Zedek, a phenomenal piece in Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. It says, pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara says, we know all this, we know this principle from Hilchos Shabbos. There's a malacha called malacha of boina. The opposite is, of course, saisa, construction, destruction. Now, we know that there's no malachas of Shabbos which is just destructive. If you tear a piece of paper, that's not a malacha. It always has to be saisa al manas livnois. You're destroying in order to build. You're tearing in order to sow. You're erasing in order to write. But just erasing or tearing, that's just destructive. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says that when you destroy a building, it'll only be a malacha if you're doing it with purpose to rebuild. So I pull down this building in order to build something bigger and better. That's a malacha of Seisa. But the Gemara adds one line. You have to destroy in order to rebuild bimkoimo on that very site. If I'm pulling down a building here in order to build elsewhere, that's not the malacha of Seisa. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, 1 second, doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? Where are all malachas learned from? The Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, when they pulled down the Mishkan, where did they put it up? Not in the same place, in a different place. They went from place to place. So how can you tell me they need to be Seisa al manas livnois bin koimoi, where the very source, which is the Mishkan, says the exact opposite? It says the Gemara, no. Because there's a pasuk in Balaisa which says, do you know how they lived in the Midbar? Al pi Hashem yachanu, al pi Hashem yisra'u. They camped and traveled with Hashem. How does that answer the question? But the Maisa wasn't in the same place. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, his famous yisra'id. If you ask somebody, there's a young born baby, tell me, where's the baby? You don't say, the baby's at home, the baby's in the park. the baby's in the makot. No, where's the baby? Baby's with the mother. He might have changed his geographical location, he hasn't changed his place. His place is with the mother. That's the baby's place. Where's the mother? The mother's in Makaret. The baby's there. The mother's in the parks. The baby's there. The baby hasn't changed its place. Its place is in the arms of his mother. Says Rucham Shalevitz, that's what the Gemara means. Klal Yisrael lives with the Rebbeinu Shalom in the Midbar. Pi Hashem Yachnu, al Pi Hashem Yisrael. We're going here, we're going there. We're moving, we're staying, we're camping. Why? What? We have no idea. We're with the Rebbeinu Shalom. That's called Seisa Almanas Livna is Bim Kaimai. The Mishkan might have changed, Klal Yisrael might have changed their geographical location. They never changed their place. They were always in the same place. Where was that? With HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Always with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I once heard a phenomenal story. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, who was the great Mashkiach of the Ponovitch Yeshiva and the Mir Yeshiva, he had two daughters. We actually have him in shul, in the Grosh Shul, you know, Ephraim Rubin. He's a great-grandson. Chatzkel Levenstein had two daughters, and it was always his life's dream to marry them off to Talmidei Chachamim. He knew, in order to do so, he's going to have to raise the funds to offer a nadan, a dowry, to be able to support young budding Talmidei Chachamim, otherwise it'll never happen. So in order to make that happen, he spent years and years and years collecting a little coin here, a little coin here, and he was hoping over the years, and indeed that's what happened, he amassed a sizable sum of money, which he was hoping he would give to one daughter, the other part to the other daughter, and that way the zeicha to two sons-in-law Talmidei Chachamim. That was his big plan after years and years and years of collecting this money. On one occasion he left his home, and his home was burgled and the money was stolen. All the money gone. His family returned home. He hadn't returned home. When they saw what happened, not only were they distraught by the theft, but they were more troubled. What on earth are we going to tell Reb Chatzkel? What are we going to tell Reb Chatzkel? This is a whole life's dream. Painstakingly collected coin after coin, year after year, it's all gone in an instant, never to be returned. What should they tell him? How should they tell him? When should they tell him? Who should they tell him? They were on a whole big commotion, and guess what? In the middle of Reb Chatzkel arrives. And they hadn't come to a conclusion. Are they going to tell him? Are they not? And when and how? Or which? Or where? Reb Chatzkel sensed, I think something's up over here. What happened? And somebody there just blurted it out. Said, all the money that you've raised for years has all been stolen. Reb Chatzkel stopped. And Reb Chatzkel said in Yiddish, Biz yet mit der Rebbeinu shel Olam, weiter mit der Rebbeinu shel Olam. Until now with Hashem, from now on onwards, we're going to continue with Hashem. The Chazanish said about, Chazanish Yotzat yesterday, Chazanish said about Reb Chatzkel, he was the dogma of Emunah B'chush. He lived by Emunah in our generation, that's what the Chazanish said. That means, a Jew is not lost. There's something that's ever here that happened that seems to be without any rhyme or reason. All I wanted to do was support two sons in law and learning, and all that's gone up in smoke. I'm with the Rebbeinu Shalom. No change. Until now, with Hashem, I'm carrying on with Hashem. Al pi Hashem yachnu, al pi Hashem yisrael. As it happens, his female tells us both of his daughters end up marrying huge Talmidei Chachamim, and that's the zeicha to his dream. How that happened, I don't know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had plans. Now, it's very fascinating. If you look in Parashat Lech Lecha, we know then that Hagar was initially evicted from the house. And it says that she came across a malach. And listen carefully to the Loshon HaPosuk in Perek Tezayin Posuk Ches. The malach says, where have you come from? Amy's their boss. Question number one. Question number two. Va'ono teilchi, and where are you going? So there are two questions over here. Vatayimen, she answered, I'm escaping from my mistress Sarai. End of pasuk. What's the obvious question? Two questions, you only answered one. Okay, that's where you're coming from, but where are you going to? So the Sfarnu on the pasuk says, Eini hoileches el mokoim muchuvan. I'm not really going anywhere. If you want to know why I'm here, I just left from Sarai. So I read also, I told Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yolmeir Bloch, he said, that's the whole point. A God-fearing Jew, even if he has to escape from somewhere, but he didn't accidentally end up elsewhere for no reason. And that's what the Malach was trying to teach her. Why? Where have you come from and where are you going? She says, well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going anywhere. I've come from, I have to escape, sorry. Why I've ended up with it, I have no idea. And Rabbi Leon Meir Bloch himself was a living dogma of this. Because he came to America after the war, escaped the clutches of the Nazis, Yimach Shimon. And when he arrived there, shortly after his arrival, he heard news that his wife and his children were all killed there in Europe. As the halacha dictates, he sat avelos just for a short while, for an hour or so. You know that halacha. If somebody hears what's called a shmua rechayka, he only hears about the patira sometime after. There's no halacha of shiva. He sat shiva for just for a few moments, and he got up and he said, apparently, I didn't just escape from Europe just to escape death. I ended up in America for a very different mission. And he got up from the shiva, he went to a sforim store, and he says, right, I want to buy out the place, I want to buy as many sforim as I can, I'm going to open the Tel Zvi Yeshiva. In other words, this is as you say, a Jew is not lost. Why have I ended up in America? I have no idea, I just have to leave Europe. No. I left Europe because I had to leave Europe. I've ended up in America because clearly I had a mission to fulfill. Rav Chaim Volozhin, we might not know this, was initially a businessman before he opened the Volozhin Yeshiva. So I read also this week, phenomenal thing. There was an annual marketplace, the Yerid. On one occasion, he went to the Yerid, and somebody meets him there, knew who Rav Chaim was and his tremendous stature, and he says to him, Rav Chaim, what are you doing over here? He says, me? I'm involved in trading. That's what I do. I'm trading. And as the story is told, Rav Chaim suddenly stopped and it hit him in between the eyes. He's asked me a very, very searching question. What am I doing over here? I'm trading. You know what I'm trading? I'm trading Olam Haba for Olam Hazeh. What am I involved with it for? And he made a decision there and then. That's it. He's leaving his business. He says, I'm going to open a yeshiva. And he says, there also I'll be involved in trading. But the other way around. I'll be trading Olam Hazeh for Olam Haba. He didn't see his visit to the marketplace. He just so happened to bump into somebody. A Jew is never lost. Everything that happens to us is there for a mission and for a reason. I'll just finish off with, I know we've said a lot of stories tonight, but one final story that my father told me. My father learned in the Manshe Yeshiva, the great Manshe Rosh Yeshiva, Yudhazev Segal Zechat Tzadik Levrocha. So my father told me that on one occasion, a Talmud of the Rosh Yeshiva was ill in hospital. So the Rosh Yeshiva went to visit him. And he took another Talmud with him to accompany him going to visit him in the hospital. They arrive in the hospital, they inquire, where is this Talmud to be found? Whatever, on the Chais, on the 12th floor. So they go to the elevator, and they're about to take the elevator, there's a big sign, elevator out of order. So we have no choice, and we're going to have to take the stairs, 12 flights of them. And there they are, trudging up the stairs, and all of a sudden, on the landing, on one of the stairwells, their staircase there, they see, flat out, on the floor, is an Arab involved in his prayer. There he's got his mat, flat out, bowing in prayer. So Rosh Hashiva turns around to the Talmud and says, that's why the elevator was open, that we should see this. If a goy, a lonely goy, he feels that he's got a daven wherever, whenever, this is the time, he's not embarrassed. In the middle of a public hospital, he's on the floor lying flat out davening to the Rabbeinu Shalom. What does that say? It's a musa for us. You know, we find ourselves a face in the park or in an airport. I don't want to make a scene, so I'll quickly just do a quick version of davening, and I'll be memoichel on a minion. I don't want to make a whole scene. This guy wasn't embarrassed, but we should be embarrassed. He says the elevator wasn't broken for no reason. Clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to see this and learn the Musa from that. And that's the estate of everything. A Jew is never lost. Nothing happens to a Jew because it just so happens that the elevator was broken, and it just so happened that somebody met Rav Chaim Volozhin and asked him, what are you doing over here trading? And it just so happened that Rav Elie Meir Bloch found himself in Europe, and it just so happened that Remotka Pogromansky missed the train station. It didn't just so happen. It was in order to perform a bris on that baby. It was in order that Rebbe Meir Bloch should open the yeshiva's tells, and that Chaim Volozhin should open yeshiva's Volozhin, and that the man Shosh Yeshiva should teach him his Talmud, a lesson for life in the halachas of Tefillah. That's the estate over here. A Jew is never lost. And if the Torah says that Tesa, the Hogah, did get lost, says Rashi, clearly she lost her faith at the same time. She's gone back to Avodah Zarah. Why? A Yid is kemol nishpa blondret. A Yid is never lost.